It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I've seen this type of behavior and actions on the part of foreign tyrants and despots and autocrats for many, many years during my CIA and national security career.
He is mean-spirited. He is dishonest. He has shown a lack of integrity. And he has continued to, I think, demean the office of the presidency.
He is, I think, the most divisive president we've ever had in the Oval Office.
This is nothing short of treasonous because it is a betrayal of the nation.
Well, I think Brennan's a very bad guy. And if you look at it, a lot of things happened under his watch. I think he's a very bad person.
All right, y'all, there you go. That was the director, former of the CIA, John Brennan, making his various comments about the president of the United States and then the president of the United States commenting on it. It's not the first time that we've talked about John Brennan. By the way, Sandy Rios with you. Good morning. It's not the first time we've talked about John Brennan, is it? And, of course, the way it's being characterized, it was on Fox News last night on Special Report, the panel, of course, eager to say all of this is just a play. This is the reason that the president is revoking John Brennan's clearance is to just get your mind off Omarosa. There's no other reason. It's political payback. They've got a personal feud. He's exercising his power. John Brennan says he's like a foreign tyrant. And, of course, that's what the left would have you believe in. Actually, a lot of never-Trumpers, too. But this is really ridiculous, I have to tell you. You know, Mark Levin, who I love, Mark is a friend of mine, actually, said this, and you've heard me say it many, many times before. This is Mark's words. He voted for a Stalinist. How did he ever get a security clearance? This is true. I've repeated this to you over and over again. John Brennan voted for Gus Hall, Communist Party USA, and I believe it was, I'm not sure what year, it was 82, something like that. And John Brennan was not a young man. I mean, not a baby. He knew what he was doing. I don't know if he was ever a member of the Communist Party, but he voted for the Communist Party candidate. And the important part about that is that's before the ignorance that has set about on our younger kids who have no idea what exactly that meant. They don't know about Joseph Stalin murdering millions of his own people. Joseph Stalin, who was in a meeting, I believe at Malta with Churchill and Roosevelt, bragged about how Satan was on his side. I mean, Churchill says something like that, God is on our side, or FDR said that. And Stalin laughed and said, no, Satan is on my side. And Joseph Stalin was a bloody murderer. It was a nightmare to live in the Soviet Union during the Stalinist era and certainly Lenin's communist philosophies. Or the driver of all of that. Communism was our enemy. We knew it. We were not confused. And yet, in the midst of all of that, John Brennan, future director of the Central Intelligence Agency, voted for the Communist Party candidate, knowing full well what he was voting for. And somehow, he grew up to be the head of the Central Intelligence Agency under Barack Obama. You think that was an accident? I don't think it was an accident. I've also told you, and this is not confirmed, but I'm just telling you, I had more than one national security expert tell me that John Brennan converted to Islam when he was the bureau chief in Saudi Arabia. So how did this man get a security clearance? And it's about time he lost his security clearance. Of course, he went to work for MSNBC as a national security expert. And keeping his clearance so he has access to all the top secret stuff, he was on this binge of undermining the president. And in the process of that, you do know, do you not, that he was a central character. He was, it seems to me, from all accounts, in fact, Rudy Giuliani, who knows more about the details of this than I do, said that he was the guy running the Russian investigation. He is the one who peddled that phony dossier, which I think it's arguably he was involved in creating that, helping to create that. He peddled that to Harry Reid and then urged CNN to go public with it. His hands are so dirty. I mean, this is dirty business. And he, along with the other national security leaders during that time, breached the trust of the American people by surveilling Americans. In fact, I want you to hear Kevin Cork's report on this, because Kevin goes into more detail. Let's listen.
The president said that Mr. Brennan's conduct and behavior had far exceeded the limits of any professional courtesy due to him, and the revocation of his security clearance comes just a day after Mr. Brennan criticized Mr. Trump's behavior on Twitter.
Mr. Brennan's lying and recent conduct, characterized by increasingly frenzied commentary, is wholly inconsistent with access to the nation's most closely held secrets.
By revoking former CIA Director John Brennan's security clearance, the Trump administration today reignited a fierce debate over just how much access former intelligence officials should have to sensitive government information when they leave their posts, and sparked new questions about whether this amounted to a Trump's enemy list.
I do believe that Mr. Trump decided to take this action, as he's done with others, to try to intimidate and suppress any criticism of him or his administration. And revoking my security clearances is his way of trying to get back at me.
These people were being singled out to have either their clearances revoked or in the process of being revoked. To me, smacks of Nixonian-type practices.
You know what? So John Brennan would know a lot about suppression, wouldn't he? I mean, I'm assuming, all call me crazy, but I'm assuming that John Brennan is steeped in the tradition of intimidation and propaganda. I mean, he loved the Soviet style, and that's what they were expert at. So when he says suppression, you know, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. It's not John Brennan's First Amendment freedoms that are being assaulted. He's free to speak however he wants. He just can't have access to the nation's secrets because he breached the trust of the American people when he had access. He tried to undermine and destroy the Constitutional Republic. That's the truth of it. And so Mark Warner then adds his, that was Senator Mark Warner adding his two cents. Remember, Mark Warner is up to his ears in this too. The truth about him as being a central figure in so much of what's happened that is, as I recall, I think he flew to London, met with Christopher Steele. Mark Warner is really up to his ears in this, and the wheels ever come off the bus on this dreadful story, his hands will not be clean. Let's go on with Kevin Cork's report.
The names of those under review reads like a veritable who's who from the intelligence community. James Comey, Susan Rice, Michael Hayden, Sally Yates, and a host of former and current FBI officials, all of whom have been ensnared in what some in the administration believe was a coordinated campaign to target then-candidate Donald Trump.
Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly.
James Clapper, who some have accused of misleading congressional lawmakers about the NSA's warrantless surveillance program, is among those whose clearance is under review.
Unprecedented. I don't know of a case where this has ever been done in the past. I mean, access to clearances normally would be done completely by a sponsoring agency.
Brett, we've just seen a tweet from Mr. Brennan not long ago, and I want to share part of it with you. He is calling the president's action part of a broader effort to suppress freedom of speech and to punish critics.
Yeah, poppycock. Sandy Rios back with you. Poppycock. These men have breached the trust. All of the lineup of those, Valerie Jarrett, others who, or Susan Rice, or not Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, who have used their security clearances to unmask American citizens, to use this in a political campaign. This is a breach of our trust. None of them deserve to have their clearances. James Comey, are you kidding me? Do you want him to have access to the nation's secrets? Look what they did when they had access. So it's appalling to me that it even got this far. You know, and a friend of mine who worked as a corporate executive, let's just say, for 26 years, made this observation. She said that she wasn't fired, but there was a it was an agreement that she stepped down. But they went through the procedure of what happens when you are fired from a corporation. And she says that when you even leave the smallest private firm, you forfeit your keys, your ID, your email address, email access, your computer, and all secure electronic access. You get escorted from the building. They watch where you clean out your desk, and you're gone. And that's if you've ever left a company, you know that that's true. And she says when you leave a federal position, you apparently leave with your security clearances intact, with illegally recorded conversations and other computer files, and full access to former colleagues. You are fully prepared to immediately write your tell-all book, hit the media circuit, circus, get a plum lobbying job, and or work to undermine and compete with the work of the agency. And she's right about that, and I think it does put it in perspective. All right, I need to move on because I have so much to tell you this morning. Let me just do it this way. It's amazing. Do you not remember Mitch McConnell promising that the Senate, under duress and pressure, would stay in session in August? Anybody remember that? Made big fanfare out of it. Senators grumbled. They complained. Well, here it is. CAP, which is Conservative Action Project, they have asked multiple times for the Senate to stay in session. They never, ever work more than 2.5 days a week. And so Conservative Action Project has just sent another letter to the Senate. On June 5th, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced the Senate would work through at the August recess. However, despite that announcement, the Senate has not worked a day since August 1st. The Senate is scheduled to return at 5:30 on August 15th, likely to adjourn less than 24 hours later by 2 p.m. on August 16th. It remains to be seen if the Senate will do any work in the remaining 2 weeks of August. The end of the fiscal year is rapidly approaching, and not a single appropriations bill has been sent to the president's desk. There are 49 judges still waiting to be confirmed, and as of July 30th, 151 executive branch nominations pending on the Senate calendar. Could I just interject? You ask me repeatedly why, for instance, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, what's he doing? What's he doing? One of the reasons he's not doing more, he's doing a lot but not more, is that he doesn't have the heads of his various agencies in place, because the Senate can't come back and work because they're so lazy. It's just absolutely stunning. And so this there's less than 40 legislative days left before the end of the year. And they're only working, again, 2.5 days a week, if they even work that much. And the letter says there's precious little time to do what you have to do. All right, so these senators are busy, of course, campaigning. And yesterday we learned that Senator Bill Nelson, who's out campaigning in Florida, has admitted in a secret recording he fabricated a claim to his supporters that Russia penetrated Florida's election system. I was going to play the clip for you, but we don't have time. He claimed to people on a campaign speech that Florida's elections were breached by the Russians. And he did it with a big smile, like a gotcha, like, see, this is how bad it is. But it's not true. It's a lie. And now he's had to confess that it is a lie. And by the way, speaking of the senators, President Trump is all over Chuck Schumer in a tweet. And this is in a tweet. The president said people, he's quoting Chuck Schumer in 2009. People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who enter the U.S. legally. Chuck Schumer in 2009, before he went left and haywire. That's Donald Trump tweeting about him. And then this is what else Schumer said. We want an immigration policy that's fair, equitable, but going to protect our people. What the American people are pleading for is sanity and common sense in our immigration system, Schumer declared. All right, so that was 2009 with Chuck Schumer, and this is the Senate. You know, when I ask you, beg you to vote in these elections with intelligence and information, this is what's at stake. They need to be gone. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered, and now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 855-PSALM-23 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, the very first day in Israel, when we're staying in Jerusalem, we go to the Mount of Olives. And it's there at the Mount of Olives we look out over the old city of Jerusalem. It's a spectacular sight. You've seen it in pictures before, but it's another thing to actually be there as we walk down from the Mount of Olives to the Garden of Gethsemane and we pray there. It's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country visiting the Holy Land, the land of Jesus. If you want information on this March 14th through the 22nd tour, just call us and we'll send you a brochure. Call 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address and we'll mail you a brochure. Or if you want to simply go online at twholyland.com, everything's there. twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
True at McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at True at McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is the one, number one, is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truitt.edu today.
Greg Laurie is one of America's most respected preachers and evangelists. Hundreds of thousands of people pile into stadiums across the country for his annual Harvest Crusade meetings. Many are expected to attend an upcoming gathering at Angel Stadium in Southern California. Harvest promoted the rally by purchasing billboards on Fashion Island, an upscale shopping district. The billboards featured a picture of Reverend Laurie holding a Bible, along with images of Christian musical groups like Mercy Me. The outdoor mall was apparently deluged with complaints and at least one serious threat. So serious, the mall decided to take down the billboards. There was no explanation, although the contract did include a clause about management's right to take down any offensive material. It does make you wonder, though. Is it possible we live in a culture so intolerant that people would be offended by the Bible? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Patiently pacing through a crowd of his supporters, Charlie Baker shook hands and stood for selfies. Then to the tune of 4 more years, he took to the stage to announce his re-election campaign for governor.
Baker the Faker.
Scott Lively is Baker's opponent in the primary.
He's done more for the left in gun confiscation than the Democrats have done anywhere in America.
He calls Baker a phony conservative and a Democrat in Republican clothing.
I will implement the full Trump agenda here in Massachusetts.
Many of his views, especially with respect to the gay community, are appalling.
Lively is a church pastor and attorney. So far, his campaign's earned just under $13,000. Far less than that of Baker's nearly $8.5 million.
100% pro-life. I'm 100% in support of the Second Amendment. No compromises.
But the one topic the two may have similar views, immigration reform.
We will always stand against making Massachusetts a sanctuary state.
They need to go stand at the back of the line and come in the right way. I will stop sanctuary cities in Massachusetts.
Both men now looking forward to the race.
I'm looking forward to the day after Labor Day.
Well, you heard the governor there say that he cannot wait until the day after Labor Day. He's referring to Tuesday, September 4th. That's the date of the primary election. We're reporting in Shrewsbury. I'm Malcolm Johnson, NECN.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's a really interesting race taking place in the country, Massachusetts. And, of course, when we think of Massachusetts, I'll speak for myself. I always think of the left. You know, Massachusetts has been on the cutting edge of all things left, whether it's gay marriage. They were the first ones to institute that. I remember going up and speaking in Faneuil Hall and Boston Commons, doing everything we could to stop that. And Massachusetts has sort of surged to the left. But in the wake of that, you would be surprised at how many people who live in this state, which gave us probably one of the most beautiful constitutions of any of the 50 states, you would be amazed at how many people in Massachusetts still hold traditional values in spite of what they find around them. The incumbent governor there is Charlie Baker. You heard him in that clip. And he's being challenged by a pastor and an attorney, someone actually that I have great admiration for, Scott. We've talked long before he ever ran for governor. So I've asked him to join us today to chat about a few things, not the least of which is his race. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Sandy. It's great to be back with you.
It's great to have you on. All right, so let's talk first about what's going on there. You have what? They said in that report you'd raised something like, what, $3,000 or something?
That was actually the money on hand at the day of the report, but we've raised well over $100,000. And I think we have a very good chance of actually beating Charlie Baker, as strange as that might seem. The conservatives are highly energized here in Massachusetts. They are very angry at Charlie Baker for going so far to the left, and we're just 20 days away from what I think is going to be a historic conservative sweep, not just my race, but a whole bunch of conservatives. Historic. Haven't had a full slate top to bottom in probably half a century here in Massachusetts.
Scott, as you have watched, I've already described at least some bit of Massachusetts lurch to the left in the last, I don't know, 20 years probably.
It goes back a ways, yeah.
Yeah. How is it just to live there under these circumstances? How has it changed just day-to-day living? Is it polarized people? You know, we're experiencing polarization nationally now. Do you think that Massachusetts was polarized earlier because of that issue?
Yes, well, I Christians have lived under totalitarian regimes all over the world, and so, you know, we can tolerate it here in Massachusetts. It's terrible. It's the most left-wing state of the union. Every issue, Massachusetts leads the way on the social agenda of the cultural Marxists, and what I represent, a historic win at the Republican convention. First time that anybody's gotten, I got almost double what I needed from the delegates to be able to run the primary. And the conservative movement is highly energized and excited that they're finally going to have a chance for a real conservative at the ballot.
It looks like you have a full slate of conservative candidates. Now, I'm taking that. You have this publication called the Boston Broadside. By the way, I want to get to the Boston Globe story in just a second. But is the Boston Broadside kind of an alternative paper for conservatives? What is it?
Yes, it's really sort of the newspaper of record for the conservative movement in Massachusetts. It's not very old, just a few years, but it's made great inroads. It's a great platform for building a real conservative alternative that can go head-to-head with the left. Because really, as we all know, it's the media that's probably the number one adversary in the culture war because they have, you know, control over all the information.
Are you trying to tell me that the media is the enemy of the people?
I stand 100% with President Trump in that statement and most of his other ones, too.
You know what? That leads me to a big story today. I don't need to tell you that the Boston Globe has encouraged newspapers to come out with op-eds today slamming President Trump on calling what they call it Trump's dirty war on the press. And I think almost 350 newspapers so far have agreed to join. These editorials will be coming out today as you wake up and you look at your newspapers. Uh-huh. Just expect a barrage of this. The Boston Globe, it used to have such influence. Do you think it still does?
Hey, you know, I am so glad that they are doing this because the entire nation is now seeing for the first time what we have been you know, trying to get them to look at for, you know, for decades, that the press is in the control of the far left completely. And now they're proving our case for us, you know, without even realizing that that they are exposing themselves to the scrutiny of the public and just how far left they are. So that's the best thing that could possibly have happened, because America backs Trump, and now they're recognizing that they really are the enemy of the people. When they're willing to take on a president who's just simply criticizing them for legitimate, you know, bias and propaganda, you know, accusations of propaganda, that is, you know, that's why I'm encouraged to see this happen, actually.
Yes, and I think this is, okay, look, as we know how important the press is. A free and open press. I think about the revolution. The press that helped, you know, get the pamphlets out, that stirred the hearts of people. Information is just key, crucial. A free flow of information and opposing views. This is part of what, it's part of our DNA as Americans. But what we're talking about is a pervading practice in the large outlets to omit stories. Let me just say this, Scott. I'll give you a chance. I'm sorry. Let me just say, I'm a commentator. I'm not a news person. I'm not. I do not present both sides. I give opinions every single morning. That's not what a newspaper is supposed to do.
Exactly.
A newspaper is supposed to walk right down the line and tell you both sides of the story factually and without any kind of bias. That's not
right.
What's happening.
Yeah, well, I wanted to be a journalist as a teenager, and that was at the beginning of the cultural Marxist takeover of the media. And they were selling it to all of us, you know, leftist young people. This is the way, you know, not to have a great career, but to change the world. And how do they change the world? They control the flow of information, and they manipulate the public, you know, actively manipulate the public through, you know, psychological tactics, through omission and favoritism of other perspectives. They're steering America. And why the conservative movement has never, really never taken them on, and you know, with all these people that are millionaires and billionaires on the right, why they have never actually, you know, gone head-to-head with the left when it's so influential, it mystifies me.
Yeah, I want to just give people a concrete example that I had a front-row seat to. Dr. Bernard Nathanson was an abortionist in the 60s, I guess you could say. I'm sure before that, but that's what I know for sure. And he was part of the movement to legalize abortion in this country, and part of like the inner circle of those who sort of strategized how to do that. And I know, because I sat and had dinner with him, that they recruited Walter Cronkite to go on the news every night and report false numbers about coat hanger abortions. They lied about statistics. Because Bernard Nathanson ended up coming out of that pro-abortion movement, and he became a pro-life advocate, totally against abortions. And so everybody, Walter Cronkite was America's trusted newsman, but he was lying through his teeth. He was about Vietnam too, by the way, and people still don't know that. And so people's minds were molded, and the stage was set for some really bad things, because newspapers wrote what Walter Cronkite had to say on the nightly news. And that's the way it works, right, Scott?
That's exactly right. And you know, when we allow sort of an elite few people to gain control of the information flow, then we have no one to blame but ourselves when they use that control, of the press to control us. Because it's the media that sort of frames the perspective of what is real versus what's not real, and they're spinning a fantasy. In many cases, they're deliberately lying, misrepresenting. And, Boston Globe is one of the absolute worst, and I'm not surprised that they led the charge in this assault on President Trump.
Scott, before we run out of time, we have to talk about this news story that concerns you. And I need to say that the way that I became acquainted with you was your fearless defense of the scriptural mandate on human sexuality. You are a bold pastor a bull, and at the same time, to break all stereotypes, you example what it means in your own personal life to love and reach out to the radical gay community, which you did through your coffee shop, you probably still do, and love them, but constantly, steadfastly speaking the truth to them. And in that regard, you went to Uganda. You talked to them. You did seminars. You spoke about God's plan for male-female relationships, and you got in big trouble. The international activists charged you with crimes against humanity. But something's happened. Let's bring up to date what's happened with that.
Yes, well, I was sued in U.S. federal court here in Springfield, Massachusetts, for crimes against humanity, for basically presenting a biblical-based message in Uganda. And you know, this was the opportunity of the left to try to shut me down, because 2 years after I was there in 2011, a leader of a group called Sexual Minorities Uganda was brutally murdered, and they tried to link his murder to my messages 2 years earlier, even though the man who committed turned out to be a gay prostitute who had killed David Kato, bashed his brains in with a hammer. When he wouldn't pay him, Cato had bailed him out of jail to be his live-in lover and houseboy. And even though the smug and the attorneys from the Marxist law firm in New York who brought the suit against me knew the facts, they actually omitted all those facts, lied to the federal judge, who was actually in league with them ideologically, in order to keep me 6.5 years in prosecution, essentially, a civil lawsuit, but persecution, just to try to shut me down and silence me from speaking a clear, compassionate, biblical message.
But the good news is that on last Friday, things changed. So explain that part, Scott. Good news last Friday.
Yes. Well, we finally won after 5 years, and the judge was forced to issue a ruling saying he had no jurisdiction in the case, which he should have done at the very beginning. And he refused in order to keep me under the axe. And then so when he did issue that, he filled the ruling saying he had no jurisdiction with this nasty vitriolic commentary about me and claiming that I was actually guilty, but providing no legal analysis whatsoever. And he framed the thing deceitfully in a way that made it look like a ruling. And then the attorneys for Smug came out and said, we're going to use this ruling all around the world against Lively and other Christians. And so we were forced to appeal our own win, to ask the appeals court to strike that language. But last Friday, the appeals court came back and basically said, you know, you don't even need to have any further proceedings, that Ponzer's arguments, Judge Ponzer's arguments, are purely his own opinion without any legal weight whatsoever. So the 6.5 years of litigation came to a screeching halt. We're done with a massive victory. And the icing on the cake is that Val Kalenda, who is one of the leaders of Smug in Kampala, Uganda, repented from lesbianism, accepted Christ, and turned her life around, and publicly came forward to say that she had left lesbianism. Right, talk about that. Talk about a dramatic, miraculous victory after something that the devil used for great evil for a long time. God turned it all to a tremendous good.
Well, Scott, that's just such a. I didn't expect that part of the story, and that just gives me goosebumps. Is that not like God?
Does it?
Is that
I started
not
crying.
Like God?
Yeah. I was reading her testimony, and I just started crying. It was just so. You know, God loves us so much, and you know, you never, never think that God has left you, because He is. His rescue is in the perfect timing, and when He does it, it's so dramatic. It's unmistakably His hand.
That's
and as much as the.
Oh, right. Scott, we're running out of time. I hate that because we could talk longer. But let me just tell people that if you're in Massachusetts, the Boston Broadside is a great paper. That's endorsing a lot of conservative candidates in this upcoming September 4th primary. Scott Lively has been our guest. He's running for governor. And Scott, it's so great to hear from you, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Yeah, votelively.com. So people want to get a copy of that Boston Broadside or contact me, votelively.com.
And seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. From a distance, the fig leaves gave Jesus the impression that there was fruit on the tree. Upon closer inspection, the tree was fruitless. Perfect church attendance and ministry activity cannot replace actual Christ-like fruit produced in our lives. From a distance, it can appear as though we're bearing fruit, but what would we find with a closer look? Are we content with fruitful appearance, or do we yearn for the real thing?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Catholic Church in Pennsylvania is reeling from a massive scandal involving priests sexually abusing children. The grand jury found at least 1,000 victims over the last 70 years. The source of this scandal goes back to the early 1960s when the church struggled to recruit priests because of the celibacy requirement. So the church began admitting homosexuals into their seminary since they had no interest in marriage. The results have been entirely predictable. There are two takeaways here. One, the link between homosexuality and pedophilia is now impossible to dismiss. And two, many of our Catholic friends are calling for the church to admit married men into the priesthood. They're right. Peter, the first pope, was married, so there is no reason priests today shouldn't be free to imitate his example.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me, it is God speaking to us, revealing himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about himself, he reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Democratic Party's leftward lurch is much in evidence in this year's midterm elections. Tuesday's primary in Vermont was a case in point as transgender activist Christine Hultquist garnered Democrats' nomination for that state's governor. To calibrate Ms. Hultquist's extremism, look no further than her recent tweet, which read, quote, "And we worry about Sharia law? Radicalized Christians are part of the American landscape, and we tolerate it," unquote. Both parts of this statement are alarming. The suggestion that we shouldn't worry about a supremacist ideology that seeks the destruction of our constitutional republican values is absurd. And the moral equivalence Ms. Hultquist implies between totalitarian Sharia's adherents and so-called radicalized Christians is not just preposterous, it is unhinged. It's high time we had a serious debate about Sharia supremacism and those who either espouse it or enable it. Let that debate begin now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Supposed to be vacationing on the Tallahassee Trail, but he was actually in Argentina. I don't know. Jim, do they have a Tallahassee Trail in Argentina? I don't think, right? No? No, right? Jim Jordan, how great is he? How great is he? How great is he? Hey, come here, Jim. Come here, come here.
president's a little taller than me. Thank you.
Think about Sandy Beals this. With you. I'm going to interrupt, Jim, because I want you to hear that was the rally in Ohio that we talked about where Jim Jordan wasn't even supposed to be on stage. The president happened to see him. He came to support Troy Balderson and arguably was the reason probably that Troy Balderson was elected. Well, at least so far. I think they're recounting right now. The point is, in that clip, did you hear the people chanting Speaker of the House, Speaker of the House? And actually some are saying that to watch that video is to see President Trump see Jim Jordan as the people see him, to see and also to hear him speak in the few minutes that he had. He was powerful. I've made no bones about the fact that I am totally all in on Jim Jordan being Speaker. I'm doing everything I can to make that happen. I do think that it will be a turning point in the nation's history. If the Republicans prevail in the House, I think he should be the Speaker. So there is a rally called the Rally for the Republic on September 26th in Washington, D.C. from 11 to 1. It's sponsored by FreedomWorks. And guess who's going to be there? Well, it's going to be Congressman Jim Jordan, Congressman Mark Meadows, Senator Ted Cruz, and our next guest, Congressman Dave Brat from the 7th District in Virginia, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Congressman Brat.
Hey, good morning. Great to be on with you always. Thank you.
You know what, Congressman? I've already said plenty, but what do you think the effect would be in the House if Congressman Jim Jordan were the Speaker? Would it make that much difference?
Oh, yeah, if you can get him to be Speaker, that's just transformational, because the Speaker really does have the power to run the show. And so, I mean, you and I talk all the time, the major problem with both parties is the budget's $4 trillion, and everybody in the country has learned the new game of getting your fingers into that pot, right? So you hire lobbyists and lawyers and whatever. And so Jim Jordan is the person who, you know, was pivotal and started the Freedom Caucus in spreading the one central message, and that's let's keep our promises and do what we told the American people we're going to do. And when he says let's lower spending, he's not just doing rhetoric. He did cut, cap, and balance back when he was head of the study committee and everything. And so he has always been truthful, and he's one of the most ethical guys you'll ever see. He'd be a great speaker. And if you just look at the core issues that we promised on, right, repeal of Obamacare, we'd be in a different spot, right? With Jordan there, it would be a full repeal of Obamacare. And then tax cuts he was for, immigration he's good on. You just go down the issues one by one by one, and it'd just be great for the country.
Congressman, I need to repeat, for those that don't know this about you, you were a professor of economics before you went into the House. I always say you're probably one of the only people there that really understands economics. A valuable player. You upset Eric Cantor, totally surprise upset when you beat him, what, 6 years ago, something like that? When was that? How many years ago was that?
Four years ago.
Was it just four? Oh, my gosh.
Four or five. Yeah, it's about five now.
Yeah, it seems like you've been there longer than that, and you've really made your mark. And now here we are. Here we are. They say congressional leaders sort of boast about doing things in regular order, that there's no omnibus this time, but instead they are doing some, from my vantage point, some really nefarious things in these upcoming mini-bus spending bills. But you know better than I. Explain what's happening.
No, that's right. And I'll just give the rough overview, too, because we need people writing and messaging in newspapers. So people out there, help us spread the word, right? The Republicans did a tax cut, and the mainstream media discovered a thing called the deficit for the first time in decades, right? The mainstream media didn't even know what a deficit was. And so we passed $150 billion tax cuts this year. If you grow at 3%, they're paid for. We're growing at 4% right now. The economy's booming. Every small business person I have in my district is just raving, right? They're investing in capital, pickup truck, forklift, et cetera. And so that's $150 billion paid for. then to get the Democrat, 9 Senate Democrat votes, right, which we needed to pass a budget last time, and this is where the president was so upset, we had to plus up the budget $400 billion. Not a word on that in the mainstream press, right? Just, it's all tax cuts from the Republicans increase the deficit. They don't because they're paid for, and they failed to mention the $400 billion increase in spending we had to do to get the Democrats to sign on because we needed 9 of them, right? So we don't have total control. And so now we're trying to avoid doing that again. So we're trying to go through the budget bills one by one by one, but at the end of the day, it's going to be the same leverage, and so we'll see where our leadership goes. And I've talked with you before, we can get around a lot of this. If the Senate would pass a budget, which they didn't last year, and they're not going to this year, we could use reconciliation and pass anything we want in the Senate with 51 votes. And so it's just dumbfounding to me why we're not doing that. Our own party has the power to pass the wall or anything else we want to with 51 votes in the Senate tomorrow if the Senate does a budget. But Mitch McConnell, for some reason, won't do that. And Paul Ryan did get a budget through, right, to his credit, the House's credit. We got our budget through last year, but the Senate is just slow-walking everything.
You know, before you joined me this morning, I was talking about the reprehensible fact that after they made such fanfare, the Senate, Mitch McConnell, about staying in session in August, they have not done that. They've been gone the first 2 weeks. They came back this week for Tuesday. They're working like 24 hours. They're leaving again, and many people doubt they'll even work next week. There are so many nominations held up, presidential nominations, judicial nominations, and not the least of which is budgeting for the country. And my understanding is that what they're trying to do is combine bills. This is in the Senate. They're trying to combine labor, education, and HHS. And I could go through this, but it's too tedious. They're giving, they're spending, they're proposing to spend a whole lot more money, 30% more than President Trump even asked for, funding every single thing the Democrats want. So if that's the case, Congressman, then how is the House going to respond to that?
Well, unfortunately, we've been caving to them on everything. That's what I mentioned, Don, on the health care bill. We actually put together a bill with the Freedom Caucus's help that lowered prices for health care. But at the end of the day, the Senate blocked it, and we, for some reason, don't fight the Senate hard enough. And so we need our House leadership to fight the Senate. And in this, it looks like it'll be the same thing, right? To get it through the Senate, they're going to have to get those 9 senators, 9 Democrats, on board again. And so they're just doing it ahead of time by offering them this, that, the other thing. And that busts the budget every time. And that is the true swamp in D.C., right? That's
yes.
Spending. It's the untouchable, the $4 trillion that are being doled out to the cronies and the special interests and the lobbies. Yeah, that's the big, tough one to get your hands on.
Well, it is, and I think it brings into focus why we have to have not only new members in Congress, and that doesn't mean everyone, by the way, incumbent Mr. Daybratt, but some of these bad characters need to be just gone. They need to be gone, and we need to institute good, strong leadership. And that reminds me, let me just restate, this Rally for the Republic is taking place September 26th in Washington. It's going to feature Congressman Bratt, Congressman Jordan, Congressman Meadows, and Ted Cruz. FreedomWorks is sponsoring it, and I know they're bringing in busloads of people. I know there's some coming from North Carolina, and if you want to find out if there's a bus from your area, go to FreedomWorks, and I'm sure that it will map that out for you. But we need to make our voices heard. This rally is in support of Jim Jordan for Speaker and Brett Kavanaugh for Supreme Court nominee. Now, let me just also say that Congressman Bratt is under attack because the left hates him for all the right reasons, and also the establishment cannot stand him because he took away that seat and caused the upset I'd already said it, Erica Cantor. And so what is happening in your race right now?
Yeah, well, we still have, there's a blue wave over Virginia still, and that's, you know, it's typical after you win the presidency, you're going to have a huge thing. So people out there, if you want to help out, go to DaveBratt.com. And also, Sandy, thanks for calling out FreedomWorks. and the great work they do. They are just a phenomenal organization. Adam Brandon always deserves a call out as well. But on my race, I need people writing letters from abroad, making calls from out of state, helping me out. We'll win it. We have more Republicans, but we got to get all the Republicans out to vote. And the Democrats are surely energized right now, but they have no agenda, right? My opponent has, you know, the usual, you know, leftist. She's not going to vote for Pelosi. And they're wearing that as a badge of honor. But if you think about it, they're not voting for Pelosi because she's too conservative, right? Every other candidate for a speaker on the left is further to the left of her. And so you really can't make it up. They have a $32 trillion Obamacare addition they're proposing. And my local paper wrote it up. You'd have to double the personal income tax and double the corporate rate to pay for the Democrat expansion of health care. That'll just bankrupt the economy. That won't put you in a recession, right? That'll put you into a depression instantly. And so that ought to be instantly disqualifying. And then my opponent, you know, is endorsed by Elizabeth Warren and all the presidential hopefuls over there. They want open borders. We have 100 million lethal doses of fentanyl coming across the border in the last 6 months, right? Human trafficking, prostitution of women, children, and the left wants open borders and to prosecute ICE agents instead of praising them for the hard work they do on interior enforcement, taking care of drugs and ending these horrible crimes against women and children. And so that's the race, but they have high energy with no agenda, and so we've got to get the word out to everybody. So folks that are listening, any way you can help me get the word out to Republicans in my area, please help me do that.
Is there early voting in Virginia?
Yeah, you can always request early voting. Students going back to college can do that, of course. And you know, and I didn't mention my book, American Underdog, but I've always said the first and foremost important principle of this country is the Judeo-Christian tradition. And that's the foundation for my book. That's the foundation for everything I taught for 18 years. And if you put the Judeo-Christian tradition in place with the rule of law, you get James Madison. And then eventually, if you're really lucky, you get free markets and green. And if you just look, the Democrat Party, and especially the hard left, are undercutting all three of those. Right? They're taking God out of their platform 8 years ago and 3 years ago, all God language. The rule of law is under attack, ICE agents, police, et cetera, all our first responders. And free markets has been under, you know, total attack by the left forever. And we suffered, right? We had low growth under Obama for 8 years. And so that's what's at stake. This is a real election. This is a cultural turning point. Everybody listening to your station knows what that is, right? It's a cultural challenge right now. Which way are we going to go? The way that made America great or the leftist thing with no agenda and just total chaos and no plan? But they just say, trust us, right? Just trust us. It'll work out like Obama. It does not work out.
Congressman Dave Bratt, 7th District. And by the way, that Rally for the Republic, sponsored by FreedomWorks, is September 26th in the Capitol. And I know they are taking some buses from some areas. So if you have an interest, you should look at FreedomWorks and see if you can get on a bus. Congressman Dave Bratt, of course, the election, the candidates are determined. The election will take place November the 6th. In Virginia. And so, as always, our voter guide, AFA.net, distinguishes the candidates, lets you know who supports them and what they stand for. And that's a great place to go to make your decision about who to vote for. Congressman Bratt, always a pleasure. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sandy, God bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you too, sir. All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.